In 1997, when I was appointed to Blakemore United Methodist Church, I walked in that front door, and there was a big drawing on the wall. It was done by a fellow named Donnie Agula. Some of you knew Donnie. There were drawings of each of the three church buildings that Blakemore had been in. There was the current building that you can see as you drive down West End and then on toward Harding Road. There was the building that no longer stands, where Bricktops is now and where Houston's used to be. And then there was a little white frame building that was on Natchez Trace. It was a very simple look, kind of like a country church. I knew that Blakemore had been started out of a Sunday school class here at West End and named for one of the members of that Sunday school class. So when I got here, with the help of some of the folks who work with the history of the church, I began to look at some of the photographs of the churches and drawings of the churches where West End had been. You see, 140 years ago, this October, this month, West End became a station church. It ceased to be a missional church. It became a station church. And we're celebrating that beginning now all the way through this next year, this 140-year history. It was started out of McKendry Methodist Episcopal Church South. And so McKendry birthed West End. West End birthed Blakemore. When I was looking at the drawings of this building, of course, but then the previous building down the street, I found that when West End started, it was in a little white frame building on Natchez Trace. So that when West End moved out of that little white frame building into its next location, it didn't sell the building. It started another church in that same spot. So I've served two churches that began in the same little building. How many people can say that? It seems to me that that spirit of McKendry birthing West End and West End birthing Blakemore is something of an image of what can happen when all of us come together and share what we have in order for the whole community to benefit. Now, St. Paul was writing into a very contentious situation. The churches in Corinth were influenced by a variety of religions in that area. Even among the Christian communities, there was great disagreement. And so Paul addresses that by making what is still a pretty startling statement. Jesus died for all. He doesn't say Jesus died for Christians. He doesn't say Jesus died for people who have the right theology. He doesn't say Jesus died for good people. Jesus died for all, not counting their sins against them. Thank goodness. But God was in Christ reconciling the whole world back to God, bringing the world closer to God. And then giving us the example in Jesus to go out and bring people closer to each other. Giving us the ministry of reconciliation. Now, here we are right in the middle of considering John Wesley's general rules. Those of you who have been around have heard this, but some of you may not have. The first general rule was do no harm. We looked at that. Now we're in the middle of looking at the second general rule, do good, the other side of the do no harm. Soon we'll be looking at practicing those practices that keep us close to God. But today we're thinking about doing good for others. And to do good for others, it seems to me we have to have a different mindset. Now, that's not original with me, because you heard St. Paul say it just a few minutes ago. We no longer view other people from a human perspective. The words are kata sarka, which means according to the flesh. The flesh is not the body. There's a different word for that. The flesh is whatever is in opposition to the way Jesus does things. We don't see people according to the flesh. Even though we once saw Jesus that way, we no longer see him that way. When we look at other people, there's a new creation. When we look at ourselves, there's a new creation. That looking from a human perspective, we might call the human stain. It's kind of hard to get out. It has at least two aspects. Looking at someone from a human perspective may mean, I'll be that person's friend, but what do I get out of it? What can they do for me? I'll follow Jesus, but what can Jesus do for me? Probably the extreme of that is the prosperity gospel. I'll follow Jesus if Jesus will make me rich. I'll follow Jesus if Jesus will be assured that nothing bad ever happens to me. I'll be your friend as long as it's pleasant for me to be your friend and you're serving me. But once that stops, hey, you can forget it. That's viewing others according to the flesh, from a human perspective. There's another way that works. It's saying, I don't need these other people. I can do it all myself. I'm an individual. I'm on my own. I can do anything I want to do. And sometimes it takes the form of saying, when we're successful at something, I've done it all myself. I didn't need anybody else to help me. I did it all myself. Which is false on the face of it. How many of you gave birth to yourself? Not a one. How many of you created the air you breathe? Not a one. How many of you created the earth you walk on? Not a one. But sometimes when we see things from a human perspective, we start thinking, hey, I accomplished this. This is my doing. But you see, followers of Christ no longer see others or themselves according to the flesh, from a human perspective. Because you see, in Christ we are a new creation. And when we, like the folks who made the soup from stones, share what we have, the good is greater than all those individual goods before they were shared. I first heard that story read on Captain Kangaroo back in the 1950s. It was from a book that was written in 1947, and it stuck with me. And I've found a number of versions since then around the world. But I think the story has a hold on us because there's a deep truth in what it says. That when we pool our gifts, God adds a surplus to that. There is something more. The whole is more than the sum of its parts. Now, we're entering into our financial campaign the next couple of weeks on All Saints Sunday. You're going to have a chance to come when you come to communion, put a pledge card down. Some of you will send it in early. Some of you will be calling after All Saints. Now, why do we do that every year? Well, the church needs money, right? Well, yeah, the church does need money. If it weren't for the folks who had an idea that they wanted to share what they had and created West End and then West End creating Blakemore, we wouldn't be sitting in this building. If it weren't for the people who sacrificed in the past, we wouldn't be here to worship. And if people are going to continue to do that, that's our job. Our responsibility. But that's not the most important reason. You see, if I had a goal for any financial campaign, it would not be a certain number. It would be that everyone believed that they could take part in what God was doing in and through this church. Now, money is a part of that, but your time is a part of that. Some folks have a lot of time and very little money. Some folks have more money and less time. Some folks have little of either, but are willing to come as they can and take part in what God is doing right now, which will shape the future for our children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren. My goal would be to have 100% participation. Have everybody do whatever it is they can. The folks who have potatoes, bring potatoes. The folks who have carrots, bring carrots. The folks who have a soup bone, bring a soup bone. The folks who have salt, bring salt. And we put it together. And together, God creates something larger than the sum of all of our gifts. It seems to me that a part of ministering to a world that is broken, just listen to the news, listen on radio, on television, on the internet, read papers. This world is sadly broken and in desperate need of the ministry of reconciliation, of not seeing other people as tools or as demons, but remembering that Christ died for all, even that person who disagrees with me. If that ministry is going to be continued, I hate to shatter your bubble here, but Congress is not going to do that. Okay? If that is going to continue, it's going to be the church. It's going to be us who make that witness. And how are we going to continue to make that witness if we don't bring our gifts together? Our time, our skills, our knowledge, our brokenness sometimes, so we can hear the stories of the brokenness of others, our money. How will that ministry of reconciliation continue? Because you see, God was in Christ reconciling the world back to God and giving us the ministry of reconciliation. The only question is, are we going to accept that invitation?